Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I'm going to be chatting with Katie from Lost Oak Farm. If you've ever wanted to start a homestead or you've had some dream of starting a homestead, which I think a lot of people in the listenership really has, but felt like, okay, is it the right time? I have small children, which how am I supposed to do this with small children? Or I have a full-time job. Katie has been there. She quit her job. She started a farm and has these two small children along the way that she is doing all of this with. So she has a lot of inspiration to share. If that is the situation that you're in, I think you will be intrigued with this. And even if you're not, or you've already had a farm for a long time, I still think that there's lots of nuggets to glean from this episode.
My name is Lisa, mother of seven and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch, cooking, and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Well, thank you so much, Katie, for joining me. I know that my listeners are really going to enjoy hearing your story in a nutshell, and I'm going to have you majorly go into this. You went from being a teacher to coming home and homesteading. And we have so many questions about that. Like, what'd you do about the loss of income? And how did you even begin? It's a very unique story, but it's also very aspirational. A lot of people want to do something like that. So yeah, let's introduce yourself and tell us about you, your family, your business, and your homestead.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me on. So as you said, my name is Katie. My husband and my two little boys and I, we raise hair sheep in Kentucky. That's the primary thing that we do. My oldest is 2.5 and my youngest is just 7 months old. So it's very entertaining around here.
Young kids, yes.
But my husband and I were both involved in agriculture from a very young age. So he was raised around beef cattle and tobacco. My family also raised tobacco and horses. So from the time we started dating, I think we were both in agreement we wanted a farm. But I think that we thought that we'd be farming like most people around here do, not as their full source of income, doing it on the weekends and in the evenings. And it wasn't really until 2020, I stepped back from teaching, that we really started to figure out what we wanted farming to look like for us. And that's when we really started getting into the quote unquote homesteading part of it. And it's been really cool. Even though I stepped away from teaching, social media has really given me this platform to be able to keep teaching, except this time it's something that I'm really passionate about. I get to teach people how to raise sheep, which is a very obscure thing, apparently.
Yeah.
And self-sufficiency skills and things like that. So it's kind of come full circle. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That is cool. And it's neat that there's so many opportunities like that today. You can pick any random interest you have, and there's people that you can find that are also interested in that. And you've collected a following over on Instagram to teach people over at Lost Oak Sheep Farm. So let's start with your homestead. What's the size? Did you have it before you quit your teaching job? Did you intend on it being a homestead, or did you take something and turn it into a homestead? What's the story?
Yeah, so we got our farm a year after we got married. So we had the land before I quit my job and before I started staying home. We also built a home here. So we have about 70 acres. And we, right after we got the farm, we also got sheep. And we kind of fell into sheep by accident. We had all intents of this being a cattle farm. And we had one part of the farm that was hard to get to. It was hard to cut hay or bush hog there. And so we thought, well, we'll just get some sheep to clean up the area to keep it maintained. And here we are, however many years later, now we are a sheep farm. So that went well.
Yeah.
But I think it took, honestly, the 2020 situation and being forced to stay home, being forced to simplify and rely on ourselves a little bit more, to realize that we wanted our farm to be more than just livestock farming. We wanted it to be something that wouldn't just support us financially, but that could support us in terms of food and wood and just being able to make use of what we had whenever we're on our own, because we were on our own for a short period of time. So it's really evolved from just a sheep farm into, it's still a sheep farm, but it is more like a big picture in how we are able to care for ourselves.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what homesteading is considered now.
Yeah, it is. It is. So what kind of variety do you have on the homestead? You mentioned, like, you know, wood and then meat. Are you raising meat, or you, how are you working all that?
Yeah. So as far as meat, we do raise some of our sheep to harvest for our own meat, but the majority of the meat that we're eating is from deer. We try to harvest enough deer every year to supply us for meat for the year. And then we raise a bigger garden than we used to. So we're doing a lot of food preservation from that as well. My husband is a woodworker, a leather worker. So we try to build and do as much as we can. So we build we have a shop apartment, we call it here, a chouse, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we built most of it. We built our barns, and we like to try to harvest as much wood as we can from our property. So it's a lot of just taking what's here and taking what we have and mm-hmm. trying to pour that back into our land to try to make it better.
Yeah. So was this the plan, or was it like you were saying, in 2020, you had to leave teaching for a little while, and then you went home and you started looking around and you thought, I can actually turn this into something and not go back to teaching? Or was it always in the back of your head when you bought the property, or was it totally just like something had to push you out of your comfort zone, and then once you were there, you wanted to stay there?
It was totally new. I don't think that it was an idea we ever had. I didn't ever have any intentions on staying home. I think having a child actually changed my mind once he was here. But whenever I decided to step back from teaching, it took a lot of us planning and looking at our budget to see if that was going to be a possibility. And whenever we did that, we tried to figure out as many ways as we could that I could supplement the income that I was losing by making money off the farm, or by saving money by doing things on the farm. So raising sheep to sell lambs, harvesting deer so that we wouldn't have to be buying meat, getting more food from our garden to go in our freezer or in our pantry. And it seemed like this whole list of things that we were coming up with really aligned with self-sufficiency skills. So it was all of these things that I was trying to do and trying to pursue to make it financially possible for me to stay at home. And it just so happened that those things go along with homesteading. And it's funny that we call it homesteading now, but once upon a time, it wasn't called homesteading. It was just living. It was just a way that people were able to live by doing all these things. And for us, it was just a way of living that made it possible for me to do what I wanted to do, which was stay at home with my kids.
Yeah. So with the instant loss of your income, how did that financially work? I know you said you did a lot of things yourself, but there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into just right away getting, you know, sheep and turning that into, of course, the saving thing. That's huge. Whenever you're home, there's a lot of things. But how monetarily did that work right away?
So with the sheep specifically?
Yeah, or just in general. I mean, you're just going from these two incomes and then you're just going down to one. And how did you decide, yes, we can do this, let's go for it? Was it a little bit uncomfortable, or were you pretty confident that it was going to work out?
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I feel like that's a question I get asked a lot is how do you do that financially? Yeah. Because that is a scary thought to give up one total income. So I was an English teacher, so math is not really my thing, but my husband is a big numbers guy. So of course we had to, you know, break it all down. And one of the things that I think people forget about is the money that you can save by staying at home, just because you're not having to pay for things associated with your job. So I know you have multiple kids. I only have two, but still paying for two kids in childcare would have been a big chunk of my income. So considering the fact that I would be saving that money, I wouldn't be paying for gas for a long commute, I wouldn't be paying for classroom supplies. So we deducted that from my income. And then as I mentioned before, we also considered the ways that I could make money from home, selling sheep, I sell cut flowers, and the ways I could save money. We deducted that. And once we had done that, we realized that my income that we were getting to keep was not that significant.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was just a question of what am I willing to sacrifice? You know, and in my case, being able to stay home with my kids and not having to go back to work meant a lot more to me than being able to go out to eat a few times a week, or being able to go to the store, shop in and buy whatever I want to. So I had to be able to admit that to myself and then follow through with that and kind of cut myself off a little bit from those financial habits that I had fallen into. And whenever it came to the farm specifically, we had really set ourselves up beforehand. And some of that was intentional. Some of that just worked out really well. We had already built our home. We had already moved here. We were in the process of fencing the farm off. There are a lot of wonderful grants out for first-time farmers and programs. So we were involved in a program through NRCS to fence off our whole farm, which is what allows us to pasture our sheep. And then we also invested in more sheep so that we would have a bigger profit. We did that before I quit my job. We invested in a working facility for me because the sheep are kind of my thing. My husband said, I do not want a second job. So he was like, I want you to be able to take care of these sheep on your own. So we invested in a working system so that if I have kids, I can get the sheep up. I can put them in a head gate. I can work on them myself without having to wait for him to get there. So we tried to set ourselves up to make money once we made that transition, which made me feel a lot more comfortable and him too with it happening.
Right, taking a break from this episode to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors, Azure Standard. So as we learn to cook from scratch in our kitchens, whether that is sourdough or soaking grains or finding high quality meats and raw cheeses, sometimes it can be really difficult to source those things. I know in my area, I can find a lot of those things, but they're at the grocery store. That's a lot more expensive. If I want a little block of raw cheese, I'm going to be paying quite a bit for it. Azure Standard works like a co-op where a bunch of like-minded individuals basically pull together an order and get it for a price that you can't find for these high-quality things by skipping the middleman. So you can go over to azurestandard.com and find a drop location that is near you. I know where I live, there are two within a 30-mile or 30-minute radius that I can get to pretty easily. You can also start a drop location in your area if that's something you and a couple friends are wanting to figure out how you can get high-quality foods right to your area. You can pull together and start your own Azure drop. I actually almost did that here in my own town, and I decided that I'd really rather drive a half hour once a month for the Azure drop and not have to manage a drop here. But either way, produce, quality meat, grains, we even get our animal feed. So we have a dairy cow, which is wonderful because we're able to source all this raw dairy. However, finding quality feed at our local feed store is near impossible. So we get a lot of our cow feed, our chicken feed from Azure Standard as well. I've done a few Azure Standard hauls over on my Farmhouse on Boone YouTube channel. So if you're curious about the other things that I have found and am loving in my kitchen, I stock up on flour from Azure Standard. You can check out one of those. You can just search on YouTube, Farmhouse on Boone, Azure Standard. Azure Standard is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off your order. So if this is something that you want to investigate in, poke around on the website, see if there's not something on there that you might already be getting locally but is really too expensive, or something that you can't find at all. You see these videos of people who say, hey, get this, and then you're like, but where do I even find that in my little town? Check it out on there. Use the code SIMPLESUMMER10. They're offering 10% off your order over at azurestandard.com. Find a drop in your location. Again, use the code SIMPLESUMMER10. So let's talk a little bit about that, the sheep business. How do you make money with sheep? Are you selling, like at what point are you selling them? Yeah, tell us about that, because I know very little about sheep farming.
Yeah, most people don't know very much about sheep farming. They just think of wool, and we actually don't have wool sheep. So our sheep are hair sheep. They don't have wool. So then people are even more confused about wool. Then what do you use the sheep for? So for us, we breed sheep, and so they all lamb here. We're actually finishing up on lambing right now. We have like 75 lambs out in the field right now. But they, once they get to weaning age, we sell all of our sheep to other farmers for breeding stock. So I think there's a large move of people who are getting into sheep, at least in our area. So we have a lot of newcomers. And so it's really cool to get to interact with them and kind of teach them and give them their first flock of sheep. So we are selling all to other farmers. But whenever we started, we were selling all of our sheep to the stockyards, and then they're gone and they're processed. And that is the sheep, the lamb meat that you can buy in the grocery store is what they would be selling at the stockyard. But people can have sheep for milk. People can raise sheep for their own meat or to sell meat to other people. So there are a few different options. And then obviously, if you have wool sheep, you can sell the wool. It doesn't have much value, but if you turn it into something cool, then you can do pretty good with it.
Yeah. I do find there's a growing interest in sheep. And the way that you make money with sheep is similar to other animals. It's just there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. I was listening to the Shepherdess podcast recently. Like, I just came across her because she did some interviews with Joel Salatin. And I love listening to Joel Salatin anytime he's talking. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was listening to her. And then I had another person on who raised sheep. So, yeah, I think there's a growing interest in that. They're a nice size animal. People who are intimidated with, you know, jumping straight into cattle, that can be intimidating because you have to work them. Like you mentioned, you have to get a lot of times you have to get the sheep in a certain area so that you can do certain things. I know that with cattle, there's just stuff comes up. So people ask me a lot about that for this episode. And I guarantee you, they ask you about it all the time. What do you do or how do you do this with kids? Because you're saying that your husband, this is not his job, this is your job, and you have a 2-year-old and a baby. So that would be the ages where it's not like you have any help around the farm with the kids. So how does that work? I know in your caption, it says something about like baby on my back. So I can completely relate with that. Is that quite literally how it works?
Yes, it is. I very vividly remember watching your Solly Rat video whenever I was pregnant with my first and just like feeling so intimidated by the idea of working with a baby on my back. And now it feels like such a natural thing. But
yes,
my husband, so he works off the farm all day. He has a ton of help in the evening. But during the day, it is very much a baby on my back pretty much all the time, and the other one walking around with me and working. I very much don't want the homestead to feel separate than my kids. I don't want it to feel like two separate things. I want them to feel like they're a part of it, and I want them to grow up learning some of the things that it took me until adulthood to learn. So I try to include them in everything I can, and a lot of times that can look like giving my toddler a job. Just making him feel like he's valuable and a part of what I'm doing whenever that's safe, obviously. But sometimes whenever I'm dealing with the sheep, it's not. And so,
yeah,
there are a lot of safety precautions that I have to take. And sometimes that just means setting him on the other side of the fence or setting him in our working system because it's like a little playground, little playpen that keeps him entertained. The baby is always on my back, whether we're trimming hooves or pulling a lamb. And it takes a lot of getting used to doing that. But once you get in a rhythm with it, it doesn't feel so intimidating. But I do think that that would be different if I had something like cattle, because I wouldn't feel safe with my toddler walking amongst the cattle. But because sheep are so much smaller and I know that the girls aren't aggressive, that I don't have to worry about that. And like you said, I think that's part of why so many new homesteaders are interested in sheep, because they don't seem as intimidating. You know, I know that I can walk through a pasture. I can catch one, I can set it on its butt and I can work with it.
Right.
And also for them, it's pretty cool because you can have a lot more sheep on a small size lot than you can with a cow. So you can get kind of more bang for your buck.
Yeah. Well, so I'm used to having help around here because my husband's home with me and then I have older kids too. And so when it's milking time, normally that's, you know, we can run things that way. We can have either kids helping with milking or helping with the younger kids. But the other day, my husband took the four oldest on a 4-hour drive down to Arkansas for a fun canoe trip. So I was home with three little kids for three different milkings, the morning, the night, and the next morning. And I was like, you know, because I've done this. I've been in your shoes. I've had two little kids, but it's just been so long that I forget what it's like. And so the way I ran it was I put the baby in the stroller, strapped him into the stroller, and then I set him kind of in front of the milk stand so that he could watch the cow as I was taking her out, getting the next cow in. And then the other ones just kind of stayed within earshot. Like I could just, you know, tell the 5-year-old, okay, stay with Daniel. And I could hear both of them. And hey, where are you guys at now? And they're collecting eggs, you know. So you do figure out ways. And we've thought about setting up for other occasions like that, like whenever just one of us is home, because that happens sometimes. One of us will take the older kids somewhere. One of us will stay home with the kids that aren't so fun to take other places, you know. Yeah. But setting up a pack and play out there, He doesn't love it. He'd rather run around, but he's safe. He can see me. It can be done. And so I did accomplish 3 milking sessions, 2 cows with the 3 babies. I'm like, we can do this.
Yeah. For our daily feeding situation, we feed the girls kind of in this pen and all the lambs kind of run around outside. So the baby's always on my back. But for my toddler, we have this tub, this random tub that's out here. And he just knows that when we're feeding and getting the girls up, he just goes and stands on that tub. And he thinks it's fun to stand up there. But also he's in a singular location. We know where he's at. He knows that routine. And he's like, once the girls get up, I can go chase lambs. Yeah. So it's getting them in a routine of knowing what they're used to or knowing what to expect is helpful too.
Yeah. And I love the daily rhythm of farm life because it gets you outside and kids want to be outside. It's harder, in my opinion, to watch them inside. Now, of course, this time of year, it's nice because we don't have to worry about getting them all bundled up. But no matter what, it really is nice getting kids outside a couple times a day just by force. You have to, because you have to deal with the animals, and it sets this rhythm to the day because there are set times when you need to go do that. And we've really enjoyed that rhythm in our family. And so I think it's a good thing for kids.
Oh, I definitely do too. And it's interesting too, because not only do you have that rhythm of getting outside, but I think being on a farm, it is refreshing that routine, even though you still have that rhythm of going outside, it's changing throughout the year with the season. So fall is our breeding season. Yes. So we're still getting outside, but they're getting to experience different things outside. Spring's our lambing, summer is the garden. Right. So it's always being out and being nature, which I think that my kids at least are so much more entertained whenever they're out and able to explore, but it's continually changing. So it doesn't feel like they're getting bored of anything.
Yeah. And I think that my number one tip to moms who they want to start something like this or something on a smaller scale, just maybe a few animals or something, and they're worried about how to do this with toddlers and babies around, just remember that it'll take longer, and it just will. You can't be in a hurry with it. There are things that you'll have to do because they're with you. And so, yes, it's harder, but also as a stay-at-home mom, especially with just little kids, you kind of have all day. Like when my little ones were 2 and baby, there wasn't homeschool to work on. If I kept them outside, then that meant there wasn't a mess going on inside. It wasn't like other things were happening while I just had these 2 little babies kind of with me. And it's okay if it took forever because that's all I really had to care for. It wasn't like, there was a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old back at the house getting breakfast or whatever. It did in some ways. It is very manageable, especially if you just know that, this might take a lot longer than somebody who didn't have this.
Yes, exactly. And honestly, that was, I think, one of the biggest shocks from switching from going to work every day to staying home, is because I was used to being on this timeline and used to having deadlines. And then you basically have total freedom of you get to decide what your schedule is. Well, obviously the children impact that, but you don't have an end of the day. You don't have a class change time that you're having to get things done by, which is a really great thing for kids because you are so flexible. But I think it was also difficult for me because I work well with deadlines.
Yeah.
And so it was honestly challenging for me to start setting those deadlines for myself and being able to give myself motivation while I wanted to be slow with the kids, but also wanting to be productive in terms of the farm and trying to merge those 2 things together. It can be tricky. So that is kind of a culture shock, I think.
Yeah. Yes, it is. But it's also very much self-imposed. You really don't have to be, it can take longer and that be okay. There's not somewhere you have to be. I'm with you though. I have a pretty structured day and we have it very, there's always deadlines throughout my day, but I always think to myself, well, what happens if I don't make that? Oh, well, really nothing. This is all just very self-imposed, especially with a couple of little kids.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to take a break from this episode to tell you about today's podcast sponsor, Carly Jean Los Angeles. Carly Jean is a capsule-based wardrobe company based out of LA. Carly, the owner and mother of 4, she and her team put together these beautiful basic collections with high quality items that are meant to be worn year after year through a lot of different life seasons. I personally have a closet stocked full of Carly Jean items. I like that I can mix and match them, but then I have this very minimal wardrobe that feels curated so I can pull things out at a moment's notice without having to think too far into what I'm going to wear. I hardly ever put on something, change, and then put on something else. I have to get that job done very quickly, and Carly Jean really helps me to do that. CJLA's mission is to simplify getting dressed and help women feel beautiful in every season of life. It's classic, timeless, and it's meant to be lived in, not difficult to wear pieces, all very easy to throw on and go about your day. CJLA has done the hunting for you and provides clothes that are effortless, easy, and flattering on all shapes, sizes, ages, and seasons of life. I have worn them pre-pregnancy, during pregnancy, like I am right now, and postpartum during nursing. I can always find something that fits the current season of life I'm in, and it's beautiful colors that are just really fit into my style. You can check out the Carly Jean website at carlyjeanlosangeles.com and use the code FARMHOUSE20 to get 20% off your order. Again, that's code FARMHOUSE20. It's off the entire site. It's a one-time use code, so stock up your cart and enjoy some of these basics this season. Okay, so one specific question I have for you is, you clearly went into sheep. You have a fairly, I mean, not large operation, but larger than most homesteaders. What homesteading ventures would you suggest for those who are just starting out? This sounds intriguing. Maybe they have a couple acres, or maybe they don't, but they're wanting to. That was us 4 years ago. We had a quarter of an acre, so we could have literally nothing except for chickens, but I wanted it. And so I was in prep mode with podcasts like this. So what would you recommend?
Yeah, definitely chickens. I feel like if you are wanting to go that animal route, you want to raise some sort of animal. I think that not just are chickens great for small spaces, but I feel like they are also the easiest animal to have as in terms of input cost and labors and things like that. I will say, I feel like chickens have little will to live, so be prepared for that. But it doesn't take much to throw a coop together, to invest in some chicks, and to start getting some eggs. And I think the cool thing about that is that once you do one thing, it's almost like a snowball effect. You see that success of trying your first homesteading thing, and that gives you the confidence and the courage to try something else. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting livestock or some sort of animal, I would suggest getting chickens. And I know some people do meat rabbits. We've never tried that before.
Yes, I've heard that too.
But I feel like that would be a good option for a small scale situation. But you don't even have to have land in order to do something. I think that is what a lot of people misconstrue from social media. They see people like us with a farm, with a land, doing things, and it makes them discouraged if they don't have that. But you can start learning skills where you are. I don't think that anyone should be waiting for the perfect opportunity to do that. You don't have to wait until you have property. You don't have to wait until you quit your job to start learning. So there are plenty of indoor things that you can try. You can start connecting with some of your local farmers to try to source your meat and your produce and start learning to cook with those fresh things. You can start learning to sew. That has been an adventure for me that I am still working on. Mm-hmm. You can start growing some microgreens. I know that's something really easy that you can grow in your windowsill, but that can still give you that experience of growing something yourself. And again, give you the confidence to hopefully try something more. I do think that my biggest piece of advice, though, is you also see people homesteading who feel like, I still feel intimidated by people because I'm like, how are they doing all of these things? But you can feel confident with just doing a homesteading thing. You do not have to do all the homesteading things.
Right.
It is okay to choose your lane and explore it. And if you want to do more after that, that's great. But you're still allowed to just choose one thing. You're allowed to try one thing. And that is still getting you further towards self-sufficiency.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And a lot of those people that you see doing more things, they probably just have more years invested in learning mm-hmm. things to the point that they've just built on the skills. And then what looks really difficult to you because there's a learning curve isn't difficult for them and takes them a lot less time because, you know, if you've been, yeah, on this journey for a decade or more, there are going to be a lot of skills that aren't as difficult as they once were. So,
yeah. And what they've been doing for years is probably feels very natural to them. Like there is probably not much thought and effort that has to go into it once they have established their routine.
Yes. Yeah. I'm already feeling that way with cheese. Like I have been building up in my brain making cheese mm-hmm. for so long. And now that I have about 8 wheels under my belt, I'm like, I know how to make cheese. Like, I don't have to watch this, you know, video step by step. Like I can get cheese going while doing other things, which seemed so difficult before. Like, well, how am I going to mm-hmm. homeschool the kids and make cheese? Well, literally, I know exactly how to do it now. So, I mean, I haven't tasted any of it yet because it takes 4 weeks to age. So, you know,
so hopefully
looks
it's
like
good.
Cheese. It's sitting in my fridge.
Yeah, but it really does become like second nature.
Yes.
It's just subconscious habits. And that's how sheep are for us right
yeah.
now. So people are asking all these questions to me. And I forget that some of those were things that we had to learn
yes.
because they're things that I don't even think about anymore because they're so natural. But whenever you're watching other people do that, it's hard to remember that because it's just... it's intimidating.
Yes. And the learning part of anything is always the intimidating part. It's always the thinking about it beforehand. The actual thing isn't that hard. It's just the learning curve of it. And so that's always my encouragement to people. It's like, if you're really thinking about something, you just need to try it. You can't ask, you know, like with sheep, if somebody has the property, they're thinking about it. And then, you know, they've asked you 10, 15 questions. It's like, okay, before you ask the 16th one, you're just gonna have to try this, you know? And then you'll see, you know, there's only so much information you can get.
Just go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So how have you carried your teaching degree into this role? You mentioned that it feels like you're still teaching, yet it's not the conventional way.
Yeah. So whenever I taught high school English, and I really did that because I loved to read and I thought, well, this is perfect. And turns out you have to teach a lot more than just reading books. So I realized that, you know, the subject matter that I was teaching wasn't something that I was super passionate about. So once we started farming more, I got the chance to do a few tours of the farm with younger kids, and I just loved it because I was getting to, one, control what the lessons looked like. I had no like lesson plans to stick to adhere to. And I got to teach about what I wanted to. And so that has been able to translate onto Instagram because there are so many people who are interested in getting sheep, which I didn't realize that. So now we're working on putting together an ebook for people to start sheep farming. And I have the creative power now to be able to do that. So I think that for people who are wanting to transition to staying at home, consider ways that you might be able to carry the skills that you have from your job into being at home and how it might be able to make money for you from home. Because that's not something that I really considered. I didn't think that I was going to use my teaching degree, you know, that those puzzle pieces didn't connect for me until we actually
right.
got into it. And I realized, wow, like I love sheep and I enjoy teaching. And, you know, social media really has given me the opportunity to combine those things together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point because it feels it's not because you end up turning this into something that gives you the freedom to be with your kids and to farm. But in some ways, I think people have this feeling of, oh, well, I'm wasting this degree that I got. And you figured out how to translate that into sort of a career, but then also into something that you really love. So that's the best of both worlds. Okay. So we did a question box over on Instagram, like we do for every episode. We got a lot of audience questions. The first category has a lot to do with financial because this is probably the scariest part for people. It's like, great, but, mm-hmm. you know, making that leap. I mean, I understand because we've done this too. I've always been a stay-at-home mom, but then we at one point decided that we would have my husband come home. And so making that leap is very scary. Okay. So the first question is, What beginning steps did you take? Did you have any side businesses before or a significant savings in place before taking the leap? Or did you, I mean, it sounds like you guys pretty much just figured, okay, without daycare, without a few other things, this will work out no matter what. But yeah, how'd that look?
Yeah, so we definitely did have an emergency fund set up. So thankfully, we have been adding to that for a while. And a portion of my husband's income paycheck still continues to go to that now. Because I think the big scary part is not just that you're going to be losing your income. It's, well, what if your spouse loses their job?
Right.
So I would definitely recommend having something to fall back on. But yes, like you said, we did do a lot of math and figured out and tried to make some extra money. Before I quit, we, as I said, we had sheep beforehand, but we had a much smaller flock. So I do think that it was beneficial and helped us that we already had experience with sheep. We'd really learned how to raise sheep at that point. And then once I started staying home, it was more learning how to market them because we were shifting from just selling at the stockyards, which is a little bit easier. You just take them and drop them off and you know somebody's going to buy them. And then whenever I stayed home, we realized that there was potential in selling to other farmers. And at that point, you're having to really market yourself and try to get connected with other people. So that transition really helped us, but it was very helpful to have the foundation of already knowing how to raise sheep and already having experience doing that.
Yes, yes. Okay, somebody else asked, how do you make up for lost benefits, healthcare, et cetera, from leaving teaching? It's a pretty specific question. Maybe somebody else also is a teacher and wants to know.
Yes, that is totally my husband. I had been on his benefits, health insurance, and everything anyways because it was unsurprisingly better than teaching options. So for us, thankfully, that wasn't a big factor in considering.
Yeah. Yeah. It was for us because we went from one income down to, I mean, you know, we went to obviously my business one, but it went from one like regular traditional income down to none.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going with a health sharing situation. We bought health insurance for the first couple of months. And I was like, what in the world? We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So then we went down to health sharing and that's been for like 4 years now or 5 years. Yeah.
I know a lot of farmers around here who are full-time farmers will sometimes drive a school bus or something like that, that only takes up a small portion of their day so that they can still get the benefits that they need, but still have plenty of time on the farm. So if someone is dealing with their spouse being self-employed and them quitting, that is an option.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, someone else asked, is it possible to do something like this without an online presence? And I'm assuming you didn't even have an online presence before you did this.
No, I didn't. So 100% possible. Yeah, I think that there are just so many homesteaders online now that maybe it makes people feel like that is making up a big part of their income. But no, for a good portion of this, I didn't have an online presence. So you got it.
Well, and in what ways has that allowed you to diversify? Because the farmer connections are probably just local connections, which is what sounds like is a primary driver of your income. Are you able to diversify because of your social media presence?
Yeah, it's been surprising that I have connected with a lot more people who aren't local, who are willing to travel in order to get sheep from someone who they feel like they can trust. So I show a good portion of how we raise our sheep, what we're doing every day, what our operation looks like. And that means a lot to people who are buying animals, not just for meat. I mean, obviously people care what goes into their meat animals, but whenever you're buying animals that are going to be living on your farm for a long time that you're buying for breeding purposes, it's really reassuring to them to be able to see how that animal has been raised, to see the genetics that went behind it. And so it's been cool. I have people who are going to be coming and getting lambs this summer from far away, all because they got to watch how that animal was raised on social media. So it definitely has the potential to impact and change how your life looks.
Yeah.
But again, we were still successful with selling to other farmers around here before being on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just been an added bonus. So totally possible. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some things that you didn't realize would be challenging and then some things that you thought would be challenging that actually turned out to be easier than you thought? Any surprises there?
So honestly, I expected the financial shift to be harder than it was. It happened pretty seamlessly. Okay. And I hope that's an encouragement for people who are super scared of it, because that definitely wasn't the hardest part. I also was very intimidated, I think, with what it would look like to have kids on the farm. I had no idea how I would multitask with taking care of the kids and taking care of the farm. And I think it wasn't until I got into it that I realized those two things are connected and they can happen at the same time. Like, those do not have to be mutually exclusive activities. As far as what I didn't expect, time. I feel like I could probably list 50 things right now that I could be off doing on the farm. I think everybody that owns a farm or homesteads has just a running list of things that you want to try. And trying to prioritize those things and not feel guilty about what you don't get done, it is difficult. It can be stressful. It can be a weight on you. And so I'm still trying to find the best way to invest my time back into the farm and still do things that I want to do that seem fun, random, learning to make cheese.
Yeah, right. That is my experience to a T. The thing, literally exactly, I don't even know if I would have thought of it if you'd asked me this question, but yes, when we went down to just doing my blog as our income, the financial thing was the thing we were most nervous about, and that worked out completely fine. No problem. Like, I think the first year we're like, well, maybe we'll have to, you know, if anything goes wrong, you'll have to get your job back. But then like that became no problem at all. And that was seamless. And then I agree with you. You think, okay, now I was going to work 8 hours a day. And so now I have 8 extra hours, which is an eternity, which is all the time I'll ever need to do everything I've ever dreamed of in my entire life. And for us, we thought, you know, Luke coming home, that's 8 extra hours a day that he wasn't there. And so that is just, you know, but it's still very finite amount of time. And then my sister, she and her husband did the same thing as us 2 years later. And she kept saying, well, when, you know, we're going to have all this time. And I'm like, just trust me. It's not like that. And then as soon as he, like about a month or two in, she was like, I totally see what you're saying. I thought we'd have endless amounts of time. So yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. It's like, where does it all go? I don't know.
It makes you wonder how you got it done before. But isn't that always the case? Like every time I have a new kid, I'm like, wait, how'd I think this number was hard? How'd I think this number was hard? It's like every single time it's the transition is so weird because it's like, well, I don't know. It's whatever situation you're in always has its unique, you know, it always feels. And so you compare yourself to others thinking, oh, well, that would be easy. But when you were there, it wasn't. And so I don't know. It's really a strange thing.
Yeah, my husband keeps saying, remember when you were overwhelmed with just one? Remember when you were struggling with just one?
I know. And I felt the same way. So there's nothing I can say. Like, that is crazy. But yeah, I know. And now whenever I'm home, like with when I was home the other day with my three little boys, I can get so much done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wait, that was so hard. That was so hard. And it's not that my older kids are hard. It's just that there's so much going on. And so when you're just home with three little babies that you can kind of control, you're like, okay, now we're going to go here. Now we're going to go here. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it feels so manageable because you're so much in control. It's not like this thing that's like you have people doing stuff everywhere.
Just running around.
It feels just different. Yeah. Yeah. And you could have never told me that. But then I'm sure now, like once I have this 8th child next month or in July, I'm going to say, remember when I thought that was hard? So I just, there's just no getting ahead of that. I don't know. And back before Luke came home and how did I manage to get it done? I don't really know, but the time thing is always strange.
It is.
Taking a break from this episode to tell you about a sponsor that I have been loving for, I think, over a year now, and that is Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. offers skincare products, cosmetics, that are made from high quality ingredients like grass-fed tallow. So many quality ingredients, nothing bad, no artificial dyes, preservatives, scents. You can trust that everything you get from them has quality ingredients, but then it's also such high quality stuff. In the past, I have had this issue with makeup where I want to look like I'm wearing makeup. I want to have the coverage on my skin, but then I also don't want any of the chemicals that will absorb into the skin. And so I feel like I have to choose between quality and health. And I finally have some makeup that I absolutely love, and that is from Tubes & Co. I've referred. All of my friends and my family are constantly asking me, and we're all Tubes & Co. customers now. I have their liquid foundation. It is by far my favorite foundation I've ever tried, so I just ordered a new one. I love it. I have their mascara. Again, quality, yet actually feel like I'm wearing regular mascara. And then I just now am trying their natural eyeliner, and I've also loved their brow pencil for the longest time. It has this angle on the end, so it makes it really easy, even if you're not a makeup artist, which I am not. And then a brush on one side, so if you need to fill in your eyebrows, it makes it very straightforward. I just this time, for the first time, tried their glow serum. I find that with my skin as I get older, if it's dry, the makeup just cakes on and looks horrible. But if I'm nice and moisturized, my skin looks more youthful. That glow serum is absolutely wonderful. Tubes & Co. is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off your order with the code FARMHOUSE. So this is a one-time use code. There are some things that you have been really wanting to try out that are natural yet still really effective and won't make you miss your favorite brands of cosmetics or skincare. Definitely also try the tallow balm. You should definitely try Tubes & Co. So head on over to Tubes & Co. That's TOUPS&CO.com and use the code FARMHOUSE to get 10% off your order and try out some wonderful, beautiful, natural and organic skincare. Okay, this question cracked me up because I got a comment on a reel yesterday. And here's the thing. I don't read my comments for a reason, but yet sometimes I do. And they get to me sometimes because it's like you want to defend yourself, you know, but you're like, who cares? Who even are you who did that? But okay, somebody asked, is homestead life really as peaceful as it looks? Then I can go into my little story about that. So is it peaceful?
Yeah, this is funny because my husband and I were actually talking about this because obviously you see all of these pretty pictures and videos and whatnot. And so I asked him, I was like, is it as peaceful as it looks? And we simultaneously, I said no, and he said even more so. But I was thinking of like the funny part of it, of like, you know, immediately I went to doctoring for pink eye and cutting open an abscess.
Yes, you went to the worst parts of it, yeah.
Yes. And he was like, well, no, I went to all of the beautiful things that we are able to get out of that, because it's only out of, you know, doctoring sheep that we get to enjoy healthy sheep. And it's only out of, you know, fixing fence that we get to have animals. And so he was much more pleasant about it than I was. But I think it's only going to be as peaceful as it seems if that is something that you desire. So I know I don't think that everybody yes. would find peace on a homestead,
right.
but that's where we
point.
Found our calling in life. That's where we felt led. And so even through all of the hard work and through the difficult days and getting aggravated and getting mad, at the end of the day, we see what we have. And yes, even more so. It is even more peaceful than I think it is portrayed as. What would you say?
Good. Well, that leads into my real story, because if you had said, no, it's terrible, it's so stressful, and I just show the pretty parts, then it wouldn't have led into my story here. So like a week or two ago, my daughter, who is 14, she created for me a series of 4 reels. I've only posted 3 of them, but she shot them all in one day and edited them. It was fun. I don't normally do like day in the life because I have a YouTube channel, and so it's too hard mm-hmm. to think about vertical and horizontal content. So I just pretty much don't. Well, all 3 of the 4 that I've posted have gone like crazy for me. Like I don't get that kind of views on my reels because they're not the kind of content Instagram wants. Instagram wants that day in the life type of stuff. So all that to say, the reason that this is getting a lot of comments is because it's getting a lot of attention because it's the kind of content you're supposed to put on Instagram. Will I keep doing it? Probably not. I don't like, you know, but anyways, one day she basically, I had no plans to do this. So it wasn't like I planned special meals or we planned a special routine. She literally documented what was going on that day. And I had this comment because people were like, oh, so peaceful, so beautiful, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I had this comment that was like, you guys do all realize this is a business. Like none of this is actually any of this. And I'm like, wrong. Like, yes, it's a business. Truly it is. And there are parts of it that are hard. Like there are parts of this business that are hard, but that particular reel series was literally exactly how our day went. And it really was like that. And I know that's hard to imagine because people are like, I'm so tired just watching this. Like, how do you, and I'm like, this is what we wanted. And so this is, this was like literally a dream day. Like I made butter. I hadn't planned to do that, but we do have a lot of cream. I made cheese. I made a meal. We sat outside. The windows were open. We were homeschooling. And legitimately, that was a real day. Yes, I do curate content. That was not one of them. That was a random day with no plan. And so those comments got me because it was so like, huh, if you only knew, like, this is not actually what you think. Like it is, you know, they were exposing me and I'm like, you're wrong. I didn't respond. Yeah. And this is why I don't read comments, because that kind of stuff, it shouldn't bother me because I know and my family knows what is true. But yeah, I guess what you said, if this isn't something that you want, yes, that would look terrible. Oh, like cooking all day and like making butter and homeschooling the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't understand why people think that a business and a life can't exist together.
Yeah.
Why they would automatically assume that, like,
because of that, things it's not aren't real.
Things aren't authentic just because you're showcasing it on Instagram. And I do think that we've gotten a little hard that way just because I think there are people who are a little fake on there. So then it makes us weary of people who are actually authentic. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do know what you're saying. And I actually had a friend tell me, she's like, but I feel like what you do on your videos is probably what you would be doing if there was no camera. And I'm like, absolutely true. Oh, yeah. It is absolutely true. Like there are some things I do, like I might make over a room because that would be a content, but I would 100% be still doing that without a camera. This is what I've always loved. Like this is what you're getting. There are certain, you know, aspects of content creation. Like would I take a photo of a million different kinds of sourdough bread? No, I wouldn't. No. But I would be making it.
Yeah. And I feel like honestly, it's motivation sometimes of things that I would like to do and things that I know should be done. And I'm like, well, I can also like show people how to do that if I set my camera up. So I'm getting things done that I wanted to get done. And I'm also able to showcase that with other people. I think that's still authentic, even though you are technically creating content.
Yeah. And maybe it's like we were talking about earlier about how like you thought it would be so hard to have kids and farm, and then you discovered that that actually worked pretty seamlessly. There's a lot of things that until you try it, you just might not realize that it can be that way. And so I think for this person, you know, they have not created these reels. And so to them, it's like, there's no way that was really your day. And I mean, you know, I did have my 14-year-old helping. It would have been a lot more stressful if I had to like set up a tripod and then go over here and go over there, and which is why I don't do it. But that particular day, that was truly just how it went. There was no plan. It was just a documentation of what we would have otherwise done had there been no camera. And so I guess, yeah, there's a lot of, until you try it, maybe there's some things you just don't know. Mr. Random Instagram commenter.
And we all need to remember that.
Yeah. With a lot of things. So I turned this into a venting session. Just had to get that off my chest.
We all need that. We all need that.
Yeah. Okay. So if you think back to the early days of coming home, and this has been what, like 2 or 3 years now? What advice would you tell yourself?
Honestly, I would say read your Bible, because I feel like I've been on this up and down roller coaster of trying to, I feel like whenever I first came home, I would prioritize things on my to-do list that I thought were making me productive over sitting down and spending time with God and reading my Bible. Because I'm like, well, in that amount of time that I'm doing my Bible study, I could have gotten this, this, and this done. Mm-hmm. And over time, I have realized that if I sit down and spend time with God, He is not going to fail me in the rest of my day. Like, He is not going to let me, you know, fall off my to-do list and not have a good day and, you know, not get things done if I prioritize Him. But it took a lot of having not great days
to realize
that I needed that habit in my life. So would definitely say choose a Bible study, stick to it, put it at the top of your to-do list every day.
Yeah. Get to that before you get to those Instagram commenters. So that you can have
truth, ma'am,
spoken into you instead of...
I need to do what you do and just not read them, apparently. Because, yes, you're like, I want to respond. But
I know.
I don't need to.
Well, yeah, what are you going to say? You know, how are you going to respond in a way that doesn't just make you look like a lunatic? Like, yes, it is.
Yeah. And you're not going to change their mind either way.
So. Exactly. Whatever. That's what I'm saying. Yes. It's a whole thing trying to find that balance with social media, because you have this platform where you can share with people and educate people and inspire people. But then of course, with that, especially if anything goes kind of nuts, which I know you've had a few reels that I have, that's when they come out. It's like a blessing and a curse all at once.
Yeah. I get to hear all about the wrong things that I'm doing on my farm. So that's...
Oh, I'm sure you do. Yep. People get lots of opinions on farm stuff. It sometimes makes me nervous to even share farm stuff. There's like certain things that...
You know are going to be a trigger. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, because we milk and, you know, so...
I'm sure that's a whole thing.
Milk and meat. It's a whole thing. Yep. Okay, do you have any frequently asked questions? Like, okay, this is something I get asked all the time that I should not be ignoring because... people clearly want to know.
I get asked this question all the time and I don't have a great answer, is how many acres you need to have sheep. So basically people want to know like the number of sheep per acre. Okay. I think cow is 1-to-1. You can have more sheep than that on an acre. Is it not?
It depends. You know, like Joel Salatin was saying an acre in, I was listening to a recent podcast, I think it was on The Shepherdess, an acre in, I forget what states he was using, but like desert areas, and then an acre over in Virginia, that's not the same thing.
Totally different. And if you're rotating your pastures, that makes a big difference too. So that's what I have to tell people. Like there are just so many variables that go into it.
Yeah.
Are you rotating pastures? Are you supplementing with feed or are they only on grass? Is it wooded areas or is it all open pasture? So I don't have a good number to get. My suggestion is always get less than you think that you'll be able to support, because you can always get more if you figure out that your pasture can support more. But you can have sheep on an acre. That you can have multiple sheep on an acre. So it's much more reasonable to start with sheep on a smaller homestead than obviously with cattle. Sheep or goats are really good for small spaces and also cleaning things up if you got a lot of weeds or anything like that.
Yes,
Sheep will do you well.
So with sheep, do they escape like goats do? We've had goats and I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, they don't. Well, I can't speak for everybody, but our sheep, as long as they have food, they are not trying to get out. Now, I will say, whenever we first got sheep, we made a lot of mistakes. We brought 4 sheep home and we had up like 2 strands of electric. That wasn't me. I blame my husband. They got out immediately, ran away, and we never saw them again.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
They really left.
I'm surprised that we got more sheep. But after that, we made sure that everywhere we had woven fence. So either permanent woven fence or woven electric that you can move. And with woven fence, we never have issues. Now, the lambs sometimes are small enough to get through the bars and our gates or things like that, but they'll go right back through to their mom.
Right.
But
yes. They have no reason to stay away.
Yeah. I think sheep are generally less curious. I think goats are just like nosy and want to roam around.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have really hilly ground. So like where the house sits is at the top of a hill. And so there's flat ground, but then the rest of the acreage where we keep animals is a hill. And so that woven mm-hmm. electric fence, we could never figure out how to get it to not ground out. It was just like, we never could get it. We have the netting and we can't get it. We could never get it figured out.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I know. Yeah. We use the charger because we have like lines for the cows, because cows are so easy. They just, suggestion.
You put like a strand up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. We'll keep them out. So that's really nice.
Well, the sheep we can, I think it's just because they've been trained, but we can put the woven electric net up without any electric on it and they won't bother it.
Oh, wow.
I guess just because they've learned to associate.
Yeah. Well, I've considered getting sheep, and we very well might at some point. I'd probably would do it for meat. So whatever, mm-hmm. I've looked into a few different breeds for that, but we don't have a whole lot of space left as far as like comfortably grazing, but mm-hmm. they're pretty small. So maybe that would work.
Yeah. The breed that we have is Katahdins.
That's the ones that I hear Shay Elliott talk about. So that's what I always assumed we would do. And they sound mm-hmm. delicious too. They sound
good. Yeah, it is pretty good. And I had really never had, I'd never eaten lamb mm-hmm. or mutton before we got our own. It is a different taste, I feel like, but I do really like it.
Well, I've only had it from the grocery store, and mm-hmm. we've made lots of like sheep jokes about how disgusting it is. But I am positive that that Katahdin must be so much better just based on what I've heard what people say. I'm like, there's no way that my taste buds are that different. Like, I've just had not good sheep. That's what
I've decided. Some sheep can be kind of greasy. The meat can. I think that's the most common comment I hear. Katahdins, I think, are the most popular hair sheep in general, but for meat too. Wool sheep are generally bigger, so you could potentially get more meat off of them and stuff, but you also are having to shear and deal with that kind of thing. But I love my Katahdins. I'm here to peer pressure you.
Well, that's probably what I would get, just because I've heard about it from enough people that, you know, I know nothing about it and grew up with sheep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds legit. I'll trust you. That's usually how I get my information. Just, you've done it. You tell me how to do it. Sounds good. Okay, well, tell us about where to best find you or any resources you have that you'd like to share with the listeners.
Yeah, so primarily on Instagram at Lost Oak Sheep Farm, and I am currently slowly but surely working on a hair sheep for beginners ebook that kind of maps out everything that you would need to know about sheep whenever you're getting into it. We learned a whole lot of stuff the hard way because sheep are so kind of niche. Not a lot of people have them. So there's not a ton of information out there. It was trying to find little bits and pieces on Google and trying to find classes to take. We didn't find one collective resource. So I feel like that's something really missing. So that is what I'm working on right now. So you can come join me on Instagram and I will let you know whenever that is ready, hopefully soon.
Awesome. We'll have to check that out. Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting to me, just because we thought about getting a couple of them. So I know next to nothing, and that sounds like a really good resource. So
thank you. We've been crazy with lambing, so it has been slow going, but we have 4 sheep left to lamb. I'm just patiently waiting on them.
Yeah. Once that, you can move into a little bit slower. Well, if you count, I don't know how much gardening you do, but yeah.
Hopefully slower.
Slower farm life. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Katie from Lost Oak Sheep Farm. This was a very lovely, inspirational interview. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It was wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast, and I will see you in the next one.